The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, I mentioned Pope Leo before the break, marking 100 days in office relatively recently. And you might have seen Mary McAleese, former president, writing a piece in the paper describing his papacy as bog standard patriarchal. Anything but forward-thinking. David Quinn is with me, a columnist for the Sunday Independent and the Irish Catholic, and Gina Menzies, theologian. David, was that a bit harsh on poor Pope Leo?
Well, I mean, I would say so. But you see, I mean, if the view is, if you don't agree with women priests, you're automatically patriarchal, then he's patriarchal, all right? And if he doesn't shift on that position, then it's going to be a patriarchal pope by the standards of Mary McAleese. And that's, you know, that's that. It's kind of set in stone from that point of view. But if you're trying to assess him, and I hate to use these kind of political terms, as either a liberal or a conservative, I don't think he's going to fit into either of those camps. I think he was chosen very quickly by the cardinals. It was the second day of the conclave, so this is in May, and he's chosen as a unity candidate. So I was in Rome for the conclave, and I was noticing, speaking to people who know the Vatican far better than I do, that liberals, again to use that term, were terrified at the prospect of another John Paul II or Benedict. They didn't want somebody who was going to go out and kind of fight the culture war about abortion and so on. And then conservatives were nervous that we'd get another Pope Francis, who they regarded as kind of disruptive and ambiguous in some of the things he was saying and might have been going to change some of the major teachings. They were concerned about that. And so I think they united very quickly behind Pope Leo because they figured he wasn't going to be either Francis II or John Paul III. So I think that's why they chose him. And I think, famous last words, you can get me back in a year's time to say you've been wrong about this, but I think he's going to be a fairly quiet and undramatic pope.
Gina, before you give us the assessment of Pope Leo, the idea of assessing a pope over 100 days, I mean, we're taking something that we do for politicians, where there's a time limit and there's a sense that they have to kind of get moving on things very quickly. It's a little silly, really, isn't it?
I'd agree, Chris. I mean, it is a kind of fallacy. And I know it's always said about politicians, you know, what's they going to have achieved by the first 100 days. I mean, I think anybody in any walk of life to sort of have a significant achievement in their first 100 days is very impossible. We live, unfortunately, in a world where we want instant everything. And, you know, this idea, he will instantly make statements about this, that and the other. I'd agree with David. I think he will go more slowly. But, I mean, I have to say, in the run up to the conclave, and lucky David, I wasn't in Rome. But I had picked him out for many reasons. One, because he's very much, you know, a Peruvian, so Latin America, liberation theology, much more than an American. But I thought he wouldn't make it because of the American link. And I think, you know, his biog, I mean, I think having so many languages is very helpful, and being a mathematician. So, you know, interesting, in his very first words from the balcony, the first word he used was peace. And I think that's really very significant. And he spoke in Italian and in Spanish. And a lot of people were waiting for him to speak in English, and he didn't, which I think was, you know, he again trying to perhaps straddle different aspects, you know, of church life. But I think, and the other thing, I suppose, that when I was looking at his biog, being a mathematician, he's very logical. You know, he's very methodological as well. And I think that's no harm. I think he is in the same, if you like, style as Francis, in that he will want to be a reformist. He will want to follow the path of Vatican II and the synodal process that Francis has put in train.
Do you suspect, though, we will ever see big, bold reform from Pope Leo? Is that the type of pope?
Well, actually, the one thing I think is that he may not make the statements that Mary McAleese, and I have to be honest, I would be supportive of the ordination of women. I particularly would be supportive of women becoming deacons. And there is actually no reason in the world why women couldn't be deacons or even be sort of ordained. But, you know, just park that for a minute. I have a feeling that because he is very thoughtful and reflective, he will feel like, do his homework, but will do his research. And if you, one of the things I've noticed about him is that he generally has his own script. He doesn't speak off the cuff a bit like Francis does. So I think when he speaks, it's very clear what he's saying. And I would I would be optimistic to think that when he's done his research, he may even reach some conclusions, you know, that I have as to how the church could be reformed. The one thing I do think, and it would be my hope, is that based on all the soundings that have taken place around the world, and there's quite a strong consensus, particularly in relation to women in the church and the equality of women, that I think he may go to have a greater emphasis on local autonomy. And I think that would cover a lot of the difficult, and if you like, the red button issues that are there at the minute. So that, in other words, the local church should be much more vibrant, should take the gospel and interpret it in the world in which they live, which would be very different in Latin America, in Western Europe and in Africa.
But is that not fly in the face of the concept of the Catholic Church as a universal church, the universality that we've, well, I was going to say that we've had for 2,000 years, for 1,000 years anyway, certainly. You know what I mean? You know,
how do we under universality? I agree with David. I think he will try and be a unifier, but the notion of unity and diversity, and there's a wonderful phrase that one of my lecturers used a long time ago, and it was from a 19th century church historian, and he said that, you know, in the essential things, agreement; in the non-essential things, tolerance; and in all things, love. And I hope that that might be the mantra of Leo, that we can have disagreements, but we're still all part of the core important elements of the church.
So we should go back, David, maybe to before kind of Gregorian revolutions and that, you know, a little more diversity within the church. Do you think we might see that?
Or might we
just see kind of really nothing? He's just kind of in the need to satisfy both of those camps you describe, he actually won't do a whole lot.
I don't think he's going to do a whole lot on the major doctrinal issues, no, because that would split the church down the middle. We've seen that happen with Anglicanism, for example. And we've got to keep in mind as well, and Gina was basically mentioning this, the church does not exist for the Western world. And its concerns are not simply those of Westerners, that about 70 or 75% now of the Christian population of the world, including the Catholic population, is outside the West. And the West itself, as a percentage of the global population, is in decline all the time. So if the church was to fasten its future on the concerns of the West, then in my opinion, it has no future. It has to fasten itself onto the rest of the world. And the rest of the world, particularly Africa's population, is growing very fast. Well, Africa, the rest of the world, I mean, China's gone down below replacement level and what have you. But the African church is growing very fast. And the African church would not want the church in the West going down the liberal path. Because when Anglicanism did that, a large part of the church in Africa that is Anglican objected mightily. So I just don't see that happening. And if he was to do that, he's not a unity candidate anymore. Mm. So I suspect he's going to try and mainly be a spiritual leader. And what was interesting is, so this is the Jubilee year in Rome. So every 25 years they have a Jubilee, and this is kind of a celebratory year. There's huge numbers are in Rome. 2 weeks ago we had a youth mass and there was a million people at it. So what I notice about him is he's not making much of an impact yet in mainstream media. I think he's biding his time, but he actually seems to be making a lot of impact on social media. And he seems to be connecting with a lot of young Catholics. That's what I notice.
And on that front then, are there those within the church who look at, and you see this maybe within, certainly in Anglicanism, and you mentioned in other countries, particularly in the UK, this drift back towards the church and numbers increasing in certain areas, that there's an opportunity there, that there's a target market they should be going after.
There's both anecdotal evidence and surveys in Britain and America, and to a lesser extent here, showing that Gen Z, some of them are getting interested in religion again, because they're kind of seeing, well, you know, what are the answers to life? They're looking at questions of meaning and purpose, and some of them are saying to themselves, this is to be found more in religion than it is in secularism. Because, you see, they don't have the hang-ups about religion that older people have, because older people grew up with the church. Some of them have bad experiences of the church. But that's kind of like, now, to a person who's 20, is like talking about British rule in Africa. Sorry, British rule in Ireland to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. It's just past history to them. So they're looking at things with fresh eyes. And I think that Pope Leo, who's relatively young for a pope, will have appeal to that sort of person.
And but is that, Gina, then what you talk about, is that where the opportunity lies in that bit of diversity, that you can maybe in some jurisdictions or in some parts of the world, you can appeal to that demographic? If you're in parts of Africa, you can appeal slightly to a different demographic. As you say, in terms of the big things within the church, there's still agreement. But you've got different hues in different places.
On the core issues, I think there are. I mean, David and I do belong to the Catholic Church, and we would have diverse views, particularly in relation to women and ordination. But we can coexist. You know, we don't always fight with each other. And I think I have lots of friends who have different views to what I have. But I think the core of the gospel is that you take the gospel and its values and you look at life as it is, wherever you are, and you try and apply them. And that's why I have this very strong sense that local autonomy is perhaps much more important than having, you know, total conformity for the 1.4 billion Catholics all over the world. And I think it's less important to people on the ground to have that kind of universal sort of blanket statement about everything. I think we can coexist with difference. And I mean,
decentralization.
Well, maybe that's it. You know, to use the political kind of terminology. Yeah. I don't think he's a politician. I think he's supremely an Augustinian. And one of my best friends in the church was this lovely, God rest him, Gabriel Daly, who's dead about 2 years ago, who's an Augustinian, who really embraced the Augustinian notion of, there's a few things about them, this interiority, very prayerful, David referenced being spiritual, but also living in a community, but also sort of in being searchers for truth. And I suppose that's what I hang my whatever on, in that, yeah, in this notion of searching for truth by embracing and listening, like the women, just one of the other points I just learned, that some of the women who worked with Leo in the past said he was superbly attentive in listening and being respectful to diverse views.
I think, and this occurred to me at the time of the conclave and after his election, I think they partly elected him as a quiet American to be a contrast to the loud American in the White House.
Oh, yes.
Okay, all right. Yeah, well, yes. The louder American in the White House is due to meet Vladimir Zelensky in the next hour and a quarter, so we will be talking about that.
And I don't think he'll be afraid to, you know, make statements in relation to what's going on in America.
Well, we'll wait and see what he has to say about what comes out of the White House today. David Quinn, columnist at the Sunday Independent and the Irish Catholic, Gina Menzies, theologian. Thank you both.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.